So here's your first big thank. You typically start out by deciding what you want to do a meta-analysis about and then changing it 700, 800 times. Because you've got to make the decision of what studies to include in the meta-analysis. What studies to include define what you're looking at. And there's this great old detective story called The Fruit at the Bottom of the Bowl, where this burglar goes into a home and steals some stuff, and on the way out the door stops and says, "I might have left some fingerprints." So they go back and they clean off where they know they were. Then they're not sure whether they were in here. And 3 days later, the police find them up in the attic with a trunk open, and they're polishing the fruit at the bottom of the bowl in the trunk. You know how shit sort of gets away from you? The main meta-analysis question used to be, what's the size of the effect under study? Which led to the question, what studies should we include? And the answer used to be, all comparable studies. You should immediately say to yourself, oh, there's some of that subjectivity we were talking about. Are studies using different operationalizations of the DV? Comparable. Experimental versus non-experimental studies? Comparable. Different populations or subpopulations? Comparable. Different tasks, stimuli, equipment, is it comparable? See the problem? How are you going to find the ones? And when you start looking, you find out that you got a stack of articles this big and you ones that big that did very much things that were the same. We suck at rerunning the same study because there's no advantage in it. There's no future in it. Nobody wants to publish a replication. This is a slide stolen from Lipsy and Wilson because I like it, so I stole it. The notion of pure replications to conceptual replications, you have to be able to argue that the collection of studies chosen for meta-analysis examine the same relationship. This may be at a broad level of abstraction, such as relationship between criminal justice interventions and recidivism, or between school-based prevention programs and problem behavior. Alternatively, it might be at a narrow level of abstraction and represent pure replications. The closer to pure replications your collection of studies, the easier it is to argue comparability. Until somebody else comes along and says, you know, when you were looking at this, you weren't paying attention to this variable that we now know is related to the DV. Remember that old idea that everybody else's confounds are your confounds? And everybody else's IVs that aren't your IVs are your confounds? This is that at a nightmarish level. So which studies to include? The main meta-analytic question is now, more commonly, what things influence the size of the effect under study? We're not just going to crank out one effect size and decide whether it's reliably different from zero. We're going to be interested in understanding more. What attributes influence the size of the effect under study? That leads to the answer of what studies to include is every study we can find. We now tend to choose every study that we can find that measured that conceptual DV or that conceptual treatment. Usually it's one or the other. If I'm trying to study, say, leadership training, I want to go find everything that used any kind of leadership training, and kind of DV is going to be a variable for me. If I'm trying to study whether somebody gets a particular form of a particular virus, that's my DV, and I want to go find every study that did that, and how they were treated or where they were now become variables. So typically we either pick, there's a treatment we want to track, and any study that used that treatment is part of our meta-analysis, or there's a particular DV we want to track, and every study that measured that DV is in our meta-analysis. Make sense? That's really the only two categories. You know me, I like to get it down to a list, that if I can get it down to two, I sure will. There's two kinds of people in the world. People who divide the world into two kinds and those who don't. Lots of coding from careful methodological evaluation of each study. That is what you really get out of a meta-analysis. We ran a study once because somebody had a whole bunch of money and really cared. We ran a study where we had two groups of people. There was about 30 people in each group. These are all people who had published at least one meta-analysis. We asked them to do a meta-analysis in an area tangential to their own that didn't involve articles that they had already included in meta-analysis. All right, so they're reading new stuff. One group did the full meta-analysis. The other group stopped after building the database. Never did the meta-analysis. You with me? We then compared those groups on what they had learned about the research literature compared to what they knew before they started. There was no difference between the groups. In terms of knowledge in your head, your understanding of that research literature, generating the database is the really important step. All that pain and anguish, which we have a tendency to push off, I'm sorry, the proper polite word is delegate. Don't. Do as much of the work yourself as you can afford to, because it's going through sorting that, deciding how to code it, changing what the coding is, going back and finding another article, rereading an article after you change the coding system. It's that immersion that is the real gold of a meta-analysis. The meta-analysis you end up with, fine. I can't tell you how many meta-analyses we haven't finished over the years because we got everything we needed to get building the database. Hand the database to somebody else. Here, go get yourself a pub. I got what I need from building the database. Said different meta-analyses were primarily used in the past to combine effect sizes from comparable studies, usually to ask if the effect was non-zero. Meta-analyses are primarily used currently to examine relationships between how a study is conducted and the effect sizes obtained from that study. That's the big shift. It's a good shift. So which studies to include? You must have explicit criteria for what studies you include. Those criteria must conform to the standards of your people. If you're going to do a meta-analysis, the first thing to do is decide where you're going to present it. Go there and look at other meta-analyses done in that community. You're going to find that there's some restriction on the subjectivity you're allowed. You might say, oh, okay, or you might say, screw that, and pick another outlet. But start with, what do your people expect? You might do better than they typically do and still not get your shit published. I'm sorry, not get your bliss and glory published because it didn't conform to their standards. And if it doesn't conform to their methodological and technique and analytic standards, they're not going to trust what you got, especially if you're telling them that what they did before is wrong. Published studies won't hack it. Because studies retaining null are less likely to be published, including only published studies, biases the effect away from effect sizes of zero. That means you got to start tracking stuff down. Again, this is the unexpected gold. You develop relationships with people in your research community. You swap stories about how data are collected. You decide whose stuff you don't trust because they kind of suck. Which typically means they over-delegate. We did a meta-analysis just looking at, we sent people out to find unpublished stuff. Based on that, we had them evaluate a series of labs that were all doing the same kind of work. This was all chemistry stuff. And what we found was that the people who had gone out to find the unpublished studies, who learned something about the labs, who interacted with them, had really solid estimates that corresponded nicely with the effect sizes of the studies in the meta-analysis. Idiots reveal themselves. They reveal themselves better in a phone call or a couple of emails than they do in their published work, which is all cleaned up and edited. Potential sources for identification of documents, computerized bibliographic databases. There are databases that are more and more people are archiving in some form unpublished articles, or at least unpublished data sets. Authors working in the research domain, conference programs, dissertations, review articles. You spend a lot of time poring over other people's reference sections, looking for one more thing that they reference that you haven't. Your computer, whenever you do a word search, you have to remind it not to look for the phrase unpublished, because you search every document for that. Life's easier now that PDFs are written so they are searchable. There are PDF readers that allow you to automatically search for stuff. As soon as that file hits, it runs through there looking for keywords and highlights them for you. Hand searching relevant articles. I don't want to tell you how many times I just sat down and found stuff that we hadn't found using expensive databases and professional reviewers. Government reports, bibliographies, and clearinghouses. You need to have explicit criteria, and then you need to track down everything that you can find. Especially if you're trying to figure out what leads to larger and smaller effect sizes, you need crapped up studies in there to give you variability. Does that make sense? If you want to study whether a teaching technique works, you don't just grab the A students. If you want to know if a remediation study works, you don't just grab the F students. You need variability to find relationships.